It takes us outside of our everyday mind and breaks up the neurotransmitters and the way we think to bring and shed light, to put cracks of the unexpected. And when we shift and have that unexpected, and when we shift and it's like, you know, we have that crack, you know, we can get out of the muck and see the light and head in that direction.
Electric Soil Podcast. Imagination is the electric soil of creation.
All right, welcome back to the show. I have a guest today, Katie Chanakis. She's an international actress who has appeared on CSI New York, Cold Case, and my personal favorite, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, among many others. Katie has shared the silver screen with such legends as Al Pacino, Mila Jovovich, Robert De Niro, Nick Cage, Morgan Freeman, to list a few. Katie is also a talented voiceover actress, specializing in cartoon animation under her branded name, Cartoon Katie. A Lover's Fairy Tale is a poetry book Katie released this past March on World Poetry Day. She's also the first NFT artist to have released a poem on love on the blockchain. Lastly, but certainly not leastly, Katie just released her first solo album under the name St. Kidiaki, Dreamland 1111, aptly released on November 11th, 2021, which also happens to be your birthday, I believe. Katie is full of color, magnificent creative energy, and all things artistic, and she's my guest today. Welcome, Katie, to the show. How are you today?
Thank you, Matt, for having me. I'm doing well. I'm here on the East Coast. It's a pleasure to be here after not for such a, seems like forever.
Right. And oh, man. So
how are you?
I am great. And thank you so much for coming on the show. There is so much to talk to you about. I want to actually start with the album because I was listening to it before we started here today. And I guess, yeah, how would you describe your sound? Because it's definitely, it's got some, you know, like some EDM or some dubstep elements to it. I like how you have a little bit of voiceovers that you put over it. The structure of the album itself, I found there's sort of the instrumental front part of it. And then you add your voiceover elements to the same song. So the instrumentals, you're adding some voiceovers. And then the back half of the album, or the back third of the album, call it, it kind of goes back to that instrumental kind of feel to it. So yeah, let's break down the album here. So Dreamland 1111, let's start with the sound. How would you describe your sound?
Yeah, totally. It's hard hitting beats. I grew up going to rave parties in Detroit before DJs were really popular in Western civilization, and I would be chilling with all these like amazing DJs internationally, and like hearing transitions and 14 bars, 16 bars, and you know, longer bars than traditional radio ready formatted songs. And you know, some tracks can be 30 minutes or 8 minutes long, just one track. And I grew up loving jungle and drum and bass, and there wasn't dubstep back then, right? And so this album is really edgy, grimy. It's dubstep, it's future trap, and it's instrumental. And it was a birthday gift to myself on 11/11, and the EP turned into a full album. And I ended up taking I was going through growing through transitions of divine femininity and exploring the power in all genders and claiming and reclaiming one's power and my power. And so I thought it would be a great gift to endow this on my birthday, and then it'd be a ripple effect for others to identify and get the vibes of the message. And so it was really me coming out for the first time under my birth name, St. Kiriaki, to like honor and respect who St. Kiriaki is in the 21st century, because, I know what I know of who she is and what she stands for. And I feel like now I can be that, you know, in a way in the 21st century. And since I do voiceovers and I write poetry, I put some, you know, lyrics to the sounds, but I wanted to also give an opportunity for people who are just like true EDM fans where they just want instrumentals and not lyrics. I wanted to have them have that option as well. So I did it with lyrics, without lyrics. Yeah, so that's kind of the vibes of Dreamland 1111.
And who are some of the collaborators that you had on this? Like, are you doing all the instrumentation and the sequencing of all the beats yourself, or do you have some collaborators that are working on you with this album?
I made every single one of the beats, and wow. I leave it raw. I don't edit anything out because it's an experiment. And for me specifically, when I use pads, so when I'm on the pads, it's the same thing as writing poetry with language. So when people are feeling the vibes, they can feel what I was growing through and the transitions that happened that are unexpected were authentic and unexpected within myself and what how I was in a flow state. So when I'm done and I press stop record, like I leave it raw, just how it is. I don't edit it out. However, I did send it to Nikki Scorpio, who's an amazing artist, human. He's an influencer on TikTok now, Yo Nikki Scorpio. And he has music streaming everywhere. His single Irregular is out about celebrating how we're all irregular. So we've been making music and we have our production, The Sophisticated Psychos, for almost a decade now. So he did all the coloring, all the editing to the visuals for Miracles Goes to Mars and Dreamland 1111. He also mixed and mastered the audio. Mm. So yeah, he made it very crispy and kind of separated some things. So you definitely need to have it mixed and mastered. And he's a genius with all those things.
That's excellent. I really like the idea that you have, and you can kind of tell, like what you said earlier in the interview, as far as not necessarily having like a structure as far as like what you view as, you know, a typical pop structure as far as like the 4 bars, 8 bars versus chorus, you know, the more typical traditional, you know, songwriting approach. And you can tell because some of the songs end up getting into that, you know, 6-minute, 40-second vibe. So I really appreciate the fact that you left it raw like that. There's so many artists that almost started, you almost polish it too much. You polish some of that edge or that grit out of it. And in that edge and the grit is the personality of the artist that sometimes can get polished out almost, right? So I really appreciate how you left it a little bit grimier, a little bit, like you say, raw. There's the expression that's left in there, right? I think therein lies the storytelling in a sense, right? If correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah. And like a year ago, Billie Eilish, her brother Phineas, I like just happened to see some Apple thing that he did and he was having a conversation and he said what I said. And I was like, oh, that's dope. He does it too. It's an experiment. Like he's just like a feeling, a vibe, and he'll just like leave it. And I'm like, oh, I do that too. So it was like really cool to hear another artist, especially like Phineas, saying that. I was like, oh, cool. You know, cause I'm sure he's had a lot more validation than I've had along my journey, but it's like, oh, okay. It's like, I can't wait to meet him and maybe like create a song together, you know?
Super cool. How has the album been received as far as, you know, how are people pointing that out? Are people being uplifted by the messages that you do have in there? Like, well, what has the response been for you?
It's been great. It's been awesome. Really great. Everyone loves it. They say it's grimy. It's unique. It's its own thing. Like I really found a happy medium with everything. They're just really liking it. So I just want to just create and keep putting stuff out there, you know, as a passion piece. And, but yeah, I'm getting the weekly reports and like more and more people are Shazamming it. So the space in between is, seems to be the popular one.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, congrats on that. That's so cool.
Thank you.
We were talking a little bit about NFTs in our pre-interview. So what a better time than to bring it up right now. So correct me if I'm wrong. You had mentioned that he would released a couple of singles or the album as an NFT, correct?
Yeah, I released the album. Not only did we drop the album on streaming everywhere, the two music videos in the morning and at night at 11/11/11/11, morning cool. and night. We released the album on the blockchain on OpenSea, 11 tracks, all 11 tracks. And I was just at Art Basel in Miami, NFT Basel, and this amazing NFT artist and collector, Blake Jameson, he bought one of my pieces. He bought Unforgettable Genius, which is the 11th track on the album. And then he's like, I'm going to buy another one. And then he bought Kiriaki and Huntress Armitas. So he ended up buying two of my NFTs at Art Basel. It was an epic moment. He goes by athletic.portraits or athletic_portraits on Instagram, but he does all these like celebrity portraits of people in like the NBA, celebrity athletes. So it was so cool. Like he just met me and saw me. He curated many events at Art Basel, and I was at one of his events that he curated over 30 NFT artists. And my friend Gregory Siff was in the show too, his works. And I was just there doing my thing and we met and he's like, yo, like I want to support living artists. Like I love your vibe and like who you are and what you're doing. Like he just got it and he took action immediately. So I really honor and respect and admire people who see something great, but then they move the energy, they move the needle, they do a call to action. I feel like a lot of people will see, observe and just stay quiet and numb and be so in their head and not take action. So I think it's really important for us to start messy, even if it's not the right action, but just to take some kind of action and to honor ourselves and honor other people. And I feel like that's how we're going to shift more into gratitude and kindness and compassion with one another when we actually take action for each other.
Oh, I love that. Thanks for sharing that, Katie. I like the just that one little soundbite you said, start messy. I love that. I'm gonna steal that. I'll go, of course, give you credit.
Start messy.
Yeah, right. I love that. That's so cool.
Yeah.
So anybody that doesn't know what an NFT is, let's do a quick little overview. I believe it's like, you know, the future of art, the future of collectibles. Obviously, it's big more in the collectibles, side of things. But I definitely view it as a huge comeback for musicians, as it's a, because let's face it, like the streaming side is great as a billboard to go, hey, this is this is my album, this is what I'm doing. But NFTs, I believe, will eventually be, you know, the next step for as far as getting musicians paid for what they're worth, right? Because musicians for the years have been always kind of, you know, ever since the Pirate Bay and you know, these other stations like that have kind of got the short end of the stick as far as artists 1,000. Go, right?
Yeah. So it's a non-fungible token. NFT is a non-fungible token. And this is not financial advice. I'm in the community. I've been a part of the space since 2018. I actually got sucked in through friends who were having me DJ all these blockchain events where they were raising funds. And so my actual first DJ event, there were artists also, and they had me put up 9 pieces of my artwork. So I was not only DJing, but I was already showcasing my work in 2018 as an NFT artist, which was so cool. And I just got sucked into it. But I'm onboarding people, and my podcast, She's All Over the Place, is totally focused on NFTs and educating people and onboarding people, especially, people who identify as females. There definitely needs to be more females into the space. There were some females, but there needs to be more. And I'm a part of the community building collective to onboard people, to educate people. But, you know, not just sharing the information that I know. And if I don't know someone, I lead them, you know, to someone who may know, like a bigger platform. But so I'm definitely not giving financial advice to anyone or anything. I'm just sharing my experience as a human, as an artist, and the kind people who have welcomed me into the space, you know?
Mm. Yeah, for sure. And then so NFTs is.
But we want everyone to be in the space. We want to onboard things. And it's not like, oh, I have to do it all on my own. People will give you the blueprint of like, this is how you have to do it, because we want to get everyone to the other side to be a part of the decentralization. So we're not working on the grids that aren't serving us, that are making us stressed out, that are, you know, too high for anyone to reach, because they're built off this illusion and platforms that aren't sustainable, you know? So we're evolving as a collective in the universe and through humanity. So we want to all have compassion, kindness, and everyone have independent wealth. And like you were saying about artists, you know, not only musicians, but, you know, physical paintings, when you have, or if you're an author or a photographer, like you have to jump hoops for your self-worth, that nicks at your self-worth for validation to say, will a gallery represent me? Who can I meet in South Africa or Dubai or Italy, or who's going to publish my book? I have to get a publishing house, and you have to jump through so many hoops and know people. You don't have to do any of that anymore. And it's like when you sell like a physical painting, you get the deal and that's it. And you get to one off. But now when you sell, you know, an NFT, you can sell it as a physical painting as well. But if you just sell like a non-fungible token, you set the mark of the percentage, which is standard about 10% right now. And so that's what I'm doing. And so like it's through the blockchain technology, you know, it's intelligent technology, right? And so like when I sell something and I receive the funds for it, if they want to resell it in 2 years, or if it resells in 4 years and 7 years and 10 years down the road, every time it resells, I get that 10%. So if it sells 7 times, I'll get that 10% 7 times.
Wow.
And so it's a way for the artist to take the power back. And the easiest way to look at it is like when you're a non-union actor, you do a commercial, they pay you 300 or 3,000 or 300,000, and it's a one-off. They can run it for eternity. They can run it, you know, exactly. But if it's a union gig, SAG after, like an actor or like a voiceover talent in an animation or a commercial or a video game, maybe not video game, but a TV show or a film, and you're an actor, when they do foreign sales, when they run it on foreign TV, I get residuals as a union talent. And if I'm doing a commercial, they have a 4-week run or a 13-week one run, and then they have to re-up and pay that fee. And then you get paid every single time it airs. So that's the cool thing about the blockchain. It's like being a union actor. You're going to get that incentive and you're going to get paid out instead of it just being a one-off non-union deal.
That's so cool. I didn't realize that aspect of it. And I like the analogy or the comparison to, you know, the film analogy, like you said, that's super cool. And yeah, just, it's so exciting. That's neat that you're almost on the ground level, like right at 2018. So you've been, like you say, you've been exposed to it for the past 3 years, where as a lot of people, I think it's becoming a lot more mainstream in this last year. A lot more people are getting wrapping their heads around it. So NFTs. Yeah. Definitely the future of collectibles and art. So super cool that you're in there with that. So thanks for speaking on that. That's super cool.
Yeah. And I do coaching. So if people want to like message me from my website, I can, guide them, help them in those areas. In addition, my podcast, she's all over the place. There's a lot of valuable information on there. So season 3, I had a couple NFT artists on. Oh. Amazing ones. Carlo Luna James. Oh my God. Carlos Luna James is amazing. He just did a deal with an auction house with Sotheby's like about 4 weeks ago. So,
wow.
Yeah,
your podcast, I believe you're starting your season 4. Is it in January? It's coming up fairly quickly. Okay,
yeah.
Cool. And we'll link that in the show notes as well.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I'm so excited because it goes with Dreamland 1111. It's a women empowerment series coupled with exploring divine femininity in all genders, while also adding value in the NFT community space. So they really go hand in hand. So I feel like super aligned with like who I am within and without. And now with, being an entertainer, they want you to be vulnerable. They want to know who you are and what you stand for, because you're going to be associated with those brands. And are they ethically sourced or good for the environment? Mm. Like, oh my God, she stands for this and she's really funny. We want her a part of our movie because she's a part of this movement. And, this means a lot to me, like health, wealth, spirituality, blockchain technology, mental health advocate, LGBTQA+ community. So like whoever you are and what you stand for, because there's so much, we have to like raise our voices and stand for something. And there's the famous quote, if you don't stand for anything, or if you don't stand for something, you fall for anything. Right. Mm. So, and I had that since I was a teenager. I had it on a dress that I got in Toronto one time when I was deciding where I was going to go. And I ended up moving out to LA, but I had this dress and it said, if you stand for nothing, you'll fall for anything. And so I remember that as a child, but it's taken me like over 2 decades to be really concrete and solid with my voice. So anyone tuning in right now, I honor you that you're here and just start messy. And it's okay if we don't all have it figured out, because we're going to figure things out along the way. And then we pivot, shift. And, it comes to this natural sweet spot, but we just have to keep going and growing through it all. And be kind to ourselves while we're doing it. And we don't have to do it all alone. We can hold other people's hands while doing it together.
Mm. A couple of things that come out of that right away. I just have a question for you as far as with your creative process. First of all, really appreciate the fact you connect so many different dots with so many different mediums of art and just things that are going on. And to be able to disconnect all of that, that's very like Renaissance woman, like makes me think of like Leonardo da Vinci, like the science mixed with the art and having it all come together, whole brain thinking. So kudos to you, honestly. It's very, very inspiring. So
love all that. Thank you. What an honor. When I was a kid, everyone called me, they're like, you're a Renaissance woman. You're a
really?
Renaissance woman. I was a kid. It was before I like did everything I've been doing, but I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what it meant. And like now I'm so grateful that you say that.
That's funny.
People are saying that. And it's like so cool to hear. And it's like, an exciting time to be alive.
Isn't it? That's so cool. I love
it
your
really
energy.
Is.
I love your enthusiasm. It's very, I can just feel it through the screen. I can only imagine what
you're bringing it out in me. You're
well,
it's
good.
In you. It's in your reflection. You're bringing it out in me. Thank you.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thanks.
Yeah.
So let's get to the fact, you have all this output, you have all these things on your mind and you're holding yourself to certain standards and goals and deadlines and so forth. What happens, and you brought it up, the mental health aspect of it. What happens if you do get, if you still get like a bit of imposter syndrome or self-doubt, or you find yourself, leaning into a bit of procrastination or perfectionism or these other different creative blocks that do come up? how do you deal with those, and how have those been throughout your artistic career?
They get hard. It gets harder and harder. All those things you mentioned, I deal with them consistently, constantly. But it's about responding to them instead of reacting to them, and utilizing the tools I've learned along the way. And so when we're learning something and we apply it, it's kind of like the student. But when you're actually learning something, you apply it and then you teach it to someone, then you get to be in action with it, and then you get to learn twice. So me as a coach and sharing what I've been through, grown through, it's me being able to double down and hold myself even more accountable. It's when you speak up your voice and have that courage, and then you're committed to yourself, and you're committed to the person, and you're committed to, you know, what we're saying with intention. So what happens is, I'll give an example of a story. So when I was 14, I was in Michigan, and I wanted to put an ad in a paper for $250 a day. And I wanted for people to come to a 2-day conference, and I rented out a conference room, and everyone had a break for lunch. And I wanted to get on a stage with the microphone and tell people what they needed to know, what I already knew. I had a knowing, and this was before I traveled the world. I had it all figured out in my mind. Who knows if one person would have showed up or if it would have been like a full house. But the thing about imposter syndrome is because there's something called the Putnam theory. He's from Chicago, Hillary Putnam. He's amazing, but look him up. But I had it all planned out from zero to hero in my mind. And the only person and thing that held me back was me. I didn't pay the money. I didn't call to put an ad in the paper to get the responses from the people, then to have it, and then to get the conference room. I thought to myself, instead of me just getting in the driver's seat and driving, let me do a dance, go around the world, get experience under my belt, and then come full circle to where I am now, 2 decades later, having my podcast, adding value, telling these things to people, and hacking things that I already knew. But now I feel, because of my experience, I'm probably eloquently and sharing information more in depth because I do have this experience. But there is the question of, what if I would have did it then? How would have my life looked? Would I have been a child prodigy and got the notoriety and my life taking me on a journey? Or would I have gone on a journey and it led me to death? Who knows, right? But what I am aware now is called the hack, H-E-C-K. And so I hack when I am aware if I'm doing something or wanting to do something and not doing it. Like I, for example, I released Hypnotic Energy solo EP on October 20th, 2020. And then I had the release of Full House EP. But because I decided I was releasing A Lover's Fairy Tale, instead of releasing both at the same time, which that was my plan, I stopped myself for myself because, you know, of slowing down and one thing at a time. So I'm like, oh, okay, instead of both of them simultaneously, which I think would have been amazing, actually, I waited and on World Poetry Day released the poetry book. And then after the poetry book, I was so engulfed with the poetry book, I woke up and this was the EP was ready to go before, you know, January, but then January happens, February happens. I was going to release it Valentine's Day. March happens, the poetry book. March, April, May. And I'm like, whoa, June. I'm like, I could have already released this EP 6 months ago and I was waiting. And then I'm like, I got caught in the imposter syndrome. So I made a date and I'm like, boom, I'm releasing it on my mom's birthday. And I released it in June. So I hacked myself. So if I stop myself for a reason, I attune and then I'm like aware. And then I just make a hard stop and I start messy. I just make a hard stop. And if I need to adjust, I adjust. But I always have to have a targeted goal of when to project something. And then, you know, the space in between showing up and making it happen. Right.
Awesome. I love that. The hack. I like talking about it. So first thing, one of the things I've noticed about you is you use specific dates or times that are significant to you or like a family member. It sounds like your mom's birthday, International Poetry Day. I love that. So there's already sort of a milestone, whether it be a personal one or something that's external that other people are aware of, which is super cool. I love that. So it isn't just like, some Tuesday in July. There's something attached to it. There's just that extra layer, which is I really appreciate. So that's super
cool. Well, thanks for, super cool. Yeah, thank you so much for noticing. And since my birthday is 11/11, and I'm attuned to, you know, being one of God's angels, and I feel we all are, just what do we choose? How do we choose to live and serve? And I always knew, I feel we have multiple purposes in this lifetime, and people are always very like hung up on like, what's my purpose? And it's like, I feel like we shouldn't be in such a rush to find our purposes, although it's exciting and an exploration. But one of my purposes, I always knew I wanted to be a ripple effect. And if it doesn't matter if I connect with someone for 1 minute, 5 minutes, 5 years, I want it to make an impact for eternity, right? And that transfer of energy. So when I release things, you know, on certain dates, and I'm attuning them, it is very specifically on an energetic quantum grid of co-collectively expanding or dismantling and wiping out an old contract and starting afresh and anew in a sacred white canvas.
Oh, beautiful. That's so powerful. So cool. We're talking about when you're using, this is a good segue. I wanted to, something you said there just made me want to circle back to just about the music side of things. We were talking about, you know, some of the frequencies that you can use. I'm just curious because you have used the, I believe they're called the Sofregio frequencies, where it's and anybody that doesn't know exactly what it is, it's a specific set of frequencies that have healing qualities to your different, the seven chakras. I think there's nine altogether, probably more than that. But did you use the Sofregio frequencies on your latest recording? Did you tune the instrumentation to that? Or I know I'm aware that you have used that in the past, though, those particular frequencies. Is that correct?
Yeah, we would have to ask Nikki Scorpio because he's a mad scientist and he did the mixing mastering and he throws things in there. We didn't go through Eric Thompson over at Subtle Energy Sciences, which we did under the Sophisticated Psychos Project for Hypnotic Energy and Full House EP, which are streaming under the Sophisticated Psychos platforms with 639 healing frequencies, which fosters forgiveness for self and in relation with one another. I felt like I had to do a lot of forgiving with self and for people in my family and my career path over the last two decades and people in my industry, just a lot of forgiving. And I felt like on a planetary level, we all needed to do a lot more forgiving of one another. And then the second EP was 396 healing frequencies, which in my vessel, I shifted to removing guilt and fear and not, you know, being inauthentic to myself and acting out of guilt and fear because I, you know, was doing it for like decades. And so I had a hack self to know if I was doing something from a guilt standpoint or a shameful standpoint, or if I was doing it because I authentically wanted to. So I call myself out on those. And then Nikki, he has put different frequencies. So I think there are healing frequencies. I just didn't promote it as healing frequencies on this, but I think he attuned them, every single one, with different healing frequencies for sure.
That's so cool. Yeah. Fascinating stuff to be able to incorporate that into music. And then for you to have been able to incorporate that into the music that you create is super cool. Very cool hybrid of you know, healing frequencies with otherwise expression, like personal expression. So super cool. Mm-hmm. So speaking of personal expression, let's get a bit into your poetry book here. So this was released earlier in 2021. It's a collection, it looks like, correct me if I'm wrong, of some poems that you had written while traveling abroad. You referenced that earlier, traveling the world, and between 2004, 2012. So let's speak a little bit about that. How did you pick the ones that you wanted to use? And what is it like to sort of reflect back on this older version of yourself, and, you know, to be able to still connect with yourself in this way? And is there a sort of a linear story that is told through these poems? Let's talk a little bit about your poetry book here.
Yeah, sure. Definitely. It's a loversfairytale.com. So when people put in their email, there's an automation that sends them a playlist. It's a gift. It's a Lover's Fairy Tale playlist of spoken word music videos that I actually produced and directed and starred in. And you actually hear my voice of my essence and my being and my spirit of what I was growing through at the time. And also you can just go to chinakas.com and put in your email and I'll send you the automation there. But it's, you know, on Amazon and Barnes and Nobles, it's everywhere. And so what happened was, speaking of reflection, during, you know, when we were all isolated in 2020, I was reflecting and I was learning about branding because I'm not a branding guru or a marketing specialist. And, you know, I was always like very big macro, doing things very externally. And I really shape shifted and rebranded my poetry. And I took 11 of my favorite pieces, and 9 out of the 11 clearly were my very, very favorites, because this is how I made the spoken word music video. So that's kind of what attuned me to putting them into the book. And out of thousands of pieces I selected, I chose these specific 11 because my birthday is 11/11. So I chose the number 11, of course. And this is about unconditional love, and it's about being primal beings and respecting Mother Earth and nature and the universe and the relationship with self, untainted by another human. So this one specifically, A Lover's Fairy Tale, is, you know, kind of it's a dream, whimsical state of land and fairy tale in a, like a dreamland state. And if you know, Carl Jung, J-U-N-G, Carl Jung, he, you know, there's a lot of people who do, he did a book on dreams, and there's a lot of cognitive therapy on, you know, dream states and what you dream and how it correlates with dreams and fairy tales and growing up with myths and the Greek mythology and the poets, the Greek poets and the language. It was just really effervescent for me to just shift into this dynamic and contemplate, I am here as a human being on this planet, and I want to fill my cup and understand the gift of who I am and why I am here first, because the next chapters of my life while growing up will be to have a family, produce a family if it's meant to be. And then it's about another human being. So before I go and give up the gift of why I'm here, I want to explore this. So I made a choice to be celibate for 7 years. Oh. And I had no sex. And I connected with people through grace, through personality, through language, through communication, and through other ways. And you can connect with people through sexual energy without actually having intercourse and being physical. So I wanted to explore consciousness in those realms and dismantle the false powers of tit for tat, and I do this for you and you do this for me. And I saw that happening a lot with guys and girls, and I didn't want to feel taken advantage of or be tainted in a way for the respect of me as a human, the respect of me being an artist, and the respect of the work that I was set out to do that was, you know, unbeknownst to me at the time, which would in turn out to be A Lover's Fairy Tale. Because, you know, through literature, we can go around the world and experience without leaving our hometown. And some people are introverts and some people do not get on planes. Mm-hmm. But some people are just very comfortable with being adventurous in their sofa at home. So this is a gift for those people who want to go on an exploration of play and fantasy of Bermuda and Dominican Republic and poetry and language, and to feel the spirit of being in spirit inspired of, you know, the universe, but also for moms and families to read it to their little girls, right? It's not like a Disney movie or like that. It's dolphins and elephants and waterfalls and exploring language and play on words through having these hopes and dreams and faith of things that can happen. And, you know, it was done purely through God's grace, and it was done purely through beautiful, innocent, colorful intention that was gifted to me. And I was honoring that. And so it's through the energetic forces of, you know, the works.
Beautiful, beautiful. I'm curious as to what your creative process is. It sounds like you have that, you're very in tune with what some folks refer to as a muse, or like another source of energy, a higher calling as far as it, and you're more or less just the conduit. It just sort of comes through you. You've talked about flow state a little bit earlier in the interview. What does that look like for you? Do you have to get into a certain sort of state to get it? Like, yeah. Like, do you do some exercises before? What does the whole creative process look like for you?
Yeah, there's different processes. Thank you for asking. So one of my processes, and I've had to shapeshift and realize things about this process is silence, you know, an infinite silence, and getting like the equilibrium to a place of balance, right? Where like the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere of the brain connect. And I'm outside of my 60 to 70,000 thoughts and just really in the intelligence of my body, right? And so we have different brains. We have our brain in our head. We have our brain in our heart. We have our brain in the gut. And then I feel, you know, on a cellular level with our autonomic nervous system, we have the capabilities to be in tuned. And as an empath and an HSP, a highly sensitive person, and 16 to 20% of the population are HSPs. When I was a kid, I wasn't involved and I didn't have that language of empath and HSP as I do now, right? But I would sit there quietly and I would observe. And so being raised very independently, you know, my family's from the old country, from Greece. So my parents have humble beginnings here of working full-time jobs. And then, you know, we were raised very independent. There was this space in between of the silence. And so I always had the depths of my soul. And then it was my artist, right? And because I was single for 9 years, because I was celibate for 7 years, you know, when I did get a partner, it was like me and then the partner. And I was always like this, like, you know what I mean? Because it was like, yo, it's like me, my artist, then a partner, right? And it's like the partner, like, not knowing it, because not knowing my endowed relationship, almost of it being like two of me, you know, there was that conflict where I was very young in a way and I had to fight through that. I was always like fighting that off, thinking this person was trying to take my artistry away from me.
Sure.
And so I didn't know how to respect my own boundaries for my artist. And that was something that I grew through and something I can write about now, right? Through evolution and sharing and caring. But that's one way. Another way is, you know, when I'm frustrated, I'll make a beat on the pads. And it's the same thing as the poetry book. So when you're hearing the instrumentals, it's poetry through the beats of how I'm feeling. And then when you're reading the poetry, sometimes verbatim, it's verbatim. When I write, I was in Hong Kong one time, I'll just wake up and go. I had a breakup one time and I wrote 7 pieces in 1 week, right? It's just like, it just takes over. I'll just like get a pen and paper and I'll just write it verbatim. And it's like, boom, it's like there. Sometimes I'll just do 3 in a row. It's very, very intense when it comes out and it's just like that. There's very little editing. Same thing with my music, no editing. It's just raw and real. I think we mentioned that earlier.
Definitely. So yeah. Have you ever gotten into the trap where you have tried to edit it? Whether it be for maybe you've had a lapse of judgment and worried about what people are thinking. So you've never had that, eh? You've always.
Well, I don't have the patience for it. I just don't have the patience for it. So if someone takes my stuff later on, which I have, if it doesn't get lost through transition, then people can break it down. But there's some of it so much that I just chalk it up as journaling. There could be good nuggets in there. There probably is, but I just take it as journaling and just that. So, you know, and that's the thing about my process too. Sometimes you're writing, a lot of times you're not writing. So then you have to do like a joy journal or a bothersome journal and make a 40-day commitment. Everything that bothers me, write it out. Everything that brings me joy, write it out. After 40 days, go back, circle all the things that bother you. Look at the pattern. Look at all the things that brought me joy. Look at the pattern. That's my spirit telling me to get in action and to do those things. But get rid of this thing, focus on this thing. When are we going to start listening to ourselves? We're ignoring ourselves all the time, right? You know, and it eats away at my self-esteem. It eats away at my self-worth when I don't listen to myself. I have coaching clients, you know, so something very specific is like very small and specific is if you're at your house and you're going to say, I'm going to do my laundry. But then you don't do your laundry. And 10 times a day, you're saying, I'm going to do the laundry. I'm going to do it in an hour. I'm going to do it after dinner. And then 2 weeks go by. My self-esteem is so low. Your self-worth is so low because you can't even honor your word. One can't even like do what they're going to do. But then when you go and finally do the laundry, you feel great. You're like, yeah, that's done. But you can trust yourself because you're honoring your word to say you're going to do it, and it builds self-esteem. So the more we say we're going to do something and we do it, whether it's to other people or just to ourselves, mostly to ourselves, it's going to deteriorate or build up our self-worth and self-esteem. And I know so many people feel worthless. Like, you know, a lot of my coaching clients, they just feel so worthless. Like, you know, like a lot of people, they don't understand, because a lot of people are projecting and pointing and telling them what to do. And a lot of people aren't listening to themselves, and they're lying to themselves, and they can't even like know what little voice is, that little voice of that intuition, or how to find it, because it's just been so jumbled by so much noise. So getting silent, right, and listening to music like Dreamland 1111, it takes us outside of our everyday mind and breaks up the neurotransmitters and the way we think, to bring and shed light, to put cracks of the unexpected. And when we shift and have that unexpected, and when we shift and it's like, you know, we have that crack, you know, we can get out of the muck and see the light and head in that direction.
I love that. Basically, just what some of those last sentences that you had coming out of that is basically perfectly explains the album, in my opinion. It's like an album that sort of disrupts your normal way of listening, of thinking. It's not a traditional album in any sense, really, but that's good. That's one of the strengths, is that it comes at you in such a way that it does. I don't know exactly how you worded it, but kind of does something to your brain. Like, you're like, oh, it really gets your attention. It makes you listen. But not in a way that it's like demanding necessarily, but it's there, it's very present, it's with you. And it is, I think that's the perfect way to describe it. It's like a pattern disrupt of an album. I think it's something along those lines. I don't know exactly what you said, I'm paraphrasing you, but I thought that was perfect. So good.
It's exactly what it is. Thank you. You hit the nail on the album. It's to disrupt one person. It disrupted me because it was unexpected. And that is the point, to disrupt the comfortable and to soothe, right? And to soothe, you know? So yes. If you're an artist, if it's going to soothe you, awesome.
Yeah.
Oh. If it's going to disrupt you, great.
Disruption is great. Some people think there's certain words that have, you know, this negative stigma to them, like manipulation, disruption. It has this failure even, where in the right context, even assumptions, under the right context, they're very powerful words. And if you reframe them, like failure reframed is learning. It's, you're learning at that point, right? So I just find it fascinating the way that we have these words and how we use them, even in our self-talk, can be very problematic, yet they are there to help us learn, basically, right? And we just have to, it's a matter of reframing.
Well, there's this famous quote, I'll botch it up, but it's like, you know, it's known in the, you know, the communities. It's like, if you want to, when you see a successful person, ask them how many times they failed, right? Ask them how many times they failed over and over and over and over again.
Absolutely. One of my favorite stories is like the Sylvester Stallone, the Rocky thing, like how many times he was turned down and told straight up, very kind of rudely or bluntly, you will never amount to anything, thousands of times. And he had, was it on his last dollar? He sold his dog, like, because he believed in himself. That's cool. Like, you know, I just love, there's so many stories like that. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, and what you just said is exactly why I've done what I've done, and why I've disrupted, and that's why I've trickled to do so many different things in life, because success is measured. Success is measured. And it's like, you know, people are like, oh, focus on one thing. And I understand focusing on one thing and then pivoting, scaling, and shifting to the other platforms, which was very difficult for me to do because I felt like I was abandoning my babies. I felt like I wasn't developing in that way, but I was sowing seeds and nurturing my gardening and then raking every 3 months and then just sowing the seeds. But as a kid, I was told like, no, you can't do this. You can't do this. And I was like, you tell me I'm not going to do this? Disruptive. Yeah. You tell me I can't do this? Okay, I'm the rebel with the cause. I'm the rebel with the cause, and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to show everyone, and I'm going to show myself that I can do it. Because if it's in here, and if it's in here, my heart, my gut, and my mind, and if it's percolating within me, I'm not going to let someone outside of me tell me what I'm going to do. I want to see what I can do and what I can create. Let's go. And let's all have it be in rotation, right?
Yeah. Oh, man, I love the garden analogy. So I have, Katie, I have this thing, same as you. That's why I draw a lot of inspiration from you, where I have five or six different things. Like, I'm a musician. I'm getting into coaching as well. I have all these different things on the go. And everybody keeps telling me that same kind of thing. And I'm believing it too, to a degree. Like, if you try and catch five rabbits, you will catch zero rabbits. So what first thing is first? And I get that. I understand that. But just my mind works. I always have like four or five goals that I want to hit. And to me, they all kind of connected. There's points of connection and overlap. and I'm working towards them. So I guess my question would be, how do you do that? I guess maybe it goes back to the garden analogy. Like, you have clearly have 5, 6, 7, 8 projects on the go at the same time. How do you tend to them all? Do you eventually go, okay, no, I got to shelf these 7 for now. I'm going to focus on this, which doesn't seem
I'll
to be the
you.
Case. Yeah, please do.
I'll show you. This is how I do it. So season 3, the theme was poetry. So when I released my poetry book every single week on the show and I had people on, I could market and promote my book for the next 23 weeks. So now when I have season 4, it's a women empowerment series focused on divine femininity in all cultures and all genders, all cultures and genders. I like that. And so Dreamland 1111 is about claiming and reclaiming one's power through divine femininity in all genders. So they go hand in hand. So while I'm rolling out the podcast season 4 and honoring women and divine femininity and what that space looks like in claiming and reclaiming one's power, I can be promoting the album simultaneously.
Gotcha.
Okay. Right?
Yeah.
So I align things. That's why I said before, when I was going to release the Full House EP with my Lover's Fairy Tale book, I could have released them at the same time. So to be having things released at the same time, because then you're talking about both of them instead of just one thing. So then I'm bridging and elevating and sharing this information instead of like a one-off. It's like, oh, I'm Greek, right? So it's like, there's like a platter of food. Like, here's a variety. Which one do you want?
Ah,
you know,
okay,
listen
okay.
to the podcast, yeah. listen to the music, like check out my acting. Like, you
I
know,
love it. I love it. I like the platter idea. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Analogies work so well. Eh? You get the visual and you're like, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I have another analogy. You want to hear it?
Please.
It's real short.
I would love it.
Basically, it's like a stove. So the water needs to boil in the back. And then sometimes you need to put more spices and it needs to simmer. Mm. Sometimes things need to marinate for a week or for a couple of days in the refrigerator.
Yes.
So while something's cooking in the back, you know, while something's cooking in the back, simmering on low, you're paying attention to what's right in front of you. Right. So I feel like that's life. Like, as an actor, they don't want to know. When a casting director or director like talks to you, they don't want to talk about acting stuff, really. They want to know what kind of life you have going outside of acting, right? So then you study the craft, but you have a life going on. So like I have the podcast and I have my music and poetry and I love traveling and culture and massages and I love all these things. And then I can take all those experiences and put it into my work as an actor, right? For voiceover and on-screen comedy and drama.
Totally makes sense. I love it. Thanks for sharing both of those. That definitely makes, and even the garden, all three of those are like, boom.
Yeah.
Love it. Thank you so much.
Okay, yeah, my pleasure.
When you were in the stage of the celibacy in the 7 to 9 years that you were getting much more in tune with yourself, I get the impression that you have a much stronger way of communicating with yourself. Was it a way of developing a way of communicating with yourself in such a way that you can separate yourself from, say, your ego? I guess the question is eventually leading into, what do you view as far as like, do you have an ego? Do you bring your ego into your artistic work, or are you separate enough with it now that you are very much just you, the muse, your inspiration? And I'm just curious with that long of a stage that you were just sort of with yourself, essentially. What did that do to your ego versus your muse, if that makes sense?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, you were mentioning the chakras earlier and, you know, the second chakra or sacral chakra, which is abundance, wealth, and sex. So there's something called chi, right? And so while being celibate for 7 years, I was building my chi, and I didn't have a dissipation of my sexual energy because I wasn't having intercourse and connecting with a human on that level. And so I was building up my own, but not only was I building up my own, it was just a sacrament. It was a discipline and it was a commitment with faith, ethics, morals, and values to be connected with myself. And I saw the way things were in the world, and I didn't want to taint, and I wanted to protect. And I knew at a very young age that I needed to protect my flame, because I saw so many people trying to put other people's flames out. And I knew mine was special, and I not more special than anyone else. I just knew that mine was special, and I felt like other people's are special too. It's just if we're aware if it is or not. And I, being a highly sensitive person, I was attuned to it, and I protected self. Also, not only to protect self, I was so young, so I didn't know things, right? I didn't know certain things. And so I didn't want to, you know, be like a ripped up cloth in the world. And, you know, and I feel honestly, if thank God I made that choice and I did those things, because I honestly feel like I maybe wouldn't have been here right now, that I would have been very reckless, that I would have been in a bunch of a wash cycle of horrible relationships. Maybe I would have gotten onto drugs and, like, you know, really hurt myself and hurt other people and just been in a bunch of toxic relationships, because, you know, we all have stuff, right? And so I kind of also did it not only, you know, at, like I said, as a protection for myself, but in that kind of a destructive manner as well. So it's like Socrates says, know thyself. So I really wanted to understand myself within and without and observe the world before I could, you know, give myself to somebody else. You know, I have to be able to trust myself first. And I didn't feel confident with trusting myself if I couldn't trust another.
Wow. That's powerful. That's powerful stuff. So coming out of that, you know, the seven-year celibacy, the 9 years, basically just being very true to yourself. How did that affect, I guess, how did you know it was time to like, did you meet somebody special? And, you know, coming out of that, how were your relationships affected? Did you feel that you had accomplished what you'd accomplished as far as you were now 100% of who you were, bringing yourself to a relationship with a great understanding of yourself? Therefore, your communication spoke to that as well. Or I'm just saying that because earlier in the interview, you did mention there was a bit of an adjustment period where you still had this connection with your art, and all of a sudden this other relationship, you kind of felt encroaching on that. And there was a little bit of, communication that had to happen in that case. I'm just interested to see what the dynamic was of you coming out of that and how that affected your relationships coming out of this, you know, 9 years of self, basically.
Well, I remember one time I was at Whole Foods in Santa Monica, and I do Kundalini, and there was this woman there dressed in all white. So I knew she was a Kundalini teacher. And I was just really emotional and very, very emotional. And I just started, it was like a floodgate that just started coming out. And I was like crying, like, I've gone 7 years and now I'm feeling like desperate that I want that intimacy, that I'm like ready for that hunger, that rage, that craving. And she looked at me, she's like, and she said what I shared with you. She's like, that whole entire time you were building your sacral chakra, you were building your chi, so nothing goes wasted. But I definitely felt that desperation. And I met someone and I trusted this person, and he just had the key to my chastity belt that just unlocked, and it just like, the ocean wave just came out. And then we went on an exploration, and I needed to explore jealousy and anger. And I felt like he held space for me and I trusted. And we went on a journey, you know, for 7 years of exploring different things. And, you know, like, he was there for me. And I reflect now, and it's like, instead of going through the washer and dryer of like so many people that I see that have been in like multiple relationships and then they leave, but then the same stuff's going to come up in another relationship. We were able to do it in almost like a decade with one another, you know, and just hold space for one another and learn and grow through all that. But I was able to do it with one person. So, and you know, it was a journey, but I'm glad I was able to do it with one person instead of like multiple people. Yeah. And it really endowed our relationship with one another. We're, you know, we're both musicians and we both love music and we both respect each other as artists. So it's like our artist is first and we're best friends. So we have, it's not crash and burn and like nothing's happening. We have so many decades. I want to say decades, but each year feels like a decade with what we went through.
Right. It sounds like
10 decades, but yeah. we went through so much that we have that to fall back on, where it's like, we support each other no matter what, you know. It's like, there's no qualms about it, because I know what this person's been through and they know what I've been through. So then we can be there to support one another independently, because we're both independent Scorpios.
Oh, nice. So yeah. Safe to say, coming out of that, you were ready and you were equipped with, again, like the know thyself. You knew thyself yeah. going into this relationship, and therefore yeah. you were able to have this really epic, healthy, functional relationship for X amount of time coming out of that.
Well, there were a lot of trials and tribulations, because I was so scared. Fear bit me along the way. I was so fearful. I was so envious and jealous. I was so scared, but I felt safe with him to explore jealousy, the number one emotion, and then anger. And then under that is sadness, right?
Yep.
Jealousy and anger are a cover. When you get past the irritation and get past the anger, it's sadness, right? So that's the real emotion. But I was able to trust this individual and go on an exploration of vulnerability, because I wasn't vulnerable in the sense of intimacy of what went on in my life and through my circumstances and experiences. So this person held space for me so I could figure that out. And it was very messy. And although I knew myself in certain ways with boundaries, I didn't know my emotions, energy, emotion, because they were so suppressed. I was taught not to show my emotions. I was very personable and very vulnerable in ways connecting, but I wasn't intimacy, letting that 5% actually see the authentic me. I was hiding it. I was taught not to show my emotions. I wasn't showing my emotions thinking it would be a weakness, when actually it's my greatest strength, and it's all of our strengths. So this person was very equipped in that area and held tremendous space for me to grow through that. And it took years.
Thanks for sharing.
For me.
Very powerful, yeah. Very powerful stuff. I'm glad. I definitely wanted to pick your brain a little bit about that. Just it was too good to you know, only sort of brush over. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And just a couple of things as we wind down here. I just wanted to get a couple little, you have so much life experience and experience in the entertainment industry. So I just wanted to see if there was a couple of funny or just entertaining stories that we could get out of you. I'm going to gravitate towards this. I know you were just, I think it was just the one episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And that was, is that the underage drinking episode?
Yes.
What was it like? I know, I'm not sure what extent you were working with those guys, or like if you keep in touch or anything like that. I have no idea about that. But what was that experience like? And this is just me being a mark for that show. I just love that show. So.
Yeah. It's such an honor. I mean, I just saw the billboard in LA 2 days ago. I'm like, yes. To be some part of something so iconic and right. like on a quantum level as a collective, like in entertainment, to be a part of that. Like I had my mark and moment, and to be Charlie's prom day, like Charlie Day's prom day. He's like one of the best leading comedians in the space and in entertainment. And he's so respected. And yeah. I love watching his journey, and it's so, and the guys are great. I was very hands-on with them. We were very hands-on. It was very specific, but they were, here are the specific building blocks, but they're so open to improv and the moment of what happens and the quirkiness of what, right. And to yes. And to extend that comedy. So it was great. And I mean, yeah, being Charlie's prom day, it was amazing. Yeah. I mean, that's like that's the dream, right? Like, who are you going to go to prom with? And then so to play his day on the show is epic.
So epic. And I love that. I definitely gather that, because my fiance and I watch the show all the time. We always gather that there's a degree of improv and flexibility within the show. You can definitely tell just the way they, there's even little times they kind of like stumble over what they're saying, but it's like perfect. So like, just leave it. It's like, cause that's naturally how people would react. Right. So
it's
so,
real.
Yeah,
it's real.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So I'm glad that you confirmed that belief. Let's talk a little bit about the sophisticated psychos. We talked about them a little bit. So what is that? Is a group of collaborators, I guess. Elaborate a little bit on that. There's a YouTube channel, and I believe the sophisticated psychos actually, is that the group that you toured with 50 Cent with? Is that?
No, I was going by Katie Coco when I toured with 50 Cent.
Okay.
I was going by Katie Coco's when Lady Gaga was starting to buzz, and I loved Chanel. And so I was like, Katie Coco. And
nice.
My friends would call me Coco. My sister still calls me Coco. And so when I was going by Katie Coco, I was doing like Britney Spears, Lady Gaga, but with EDM music,
cool.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And then I went on tour in South Africa and Europe, and they invited me to Australia, New Zealand for that leg of the tour. And then I booked a movie with David Tui, who did G.I. Jane and The Fugitive, with Mila Jovovich and Steve Zahn. And I went to Puerto Rico and I took that opportunity instead. Thank goodness the residuals on that was amazing. And they were great people to work with. But after that, I went to Paris for Fashion Week. I was really inspired as a poet being in fashion. And I wrote Paris Fashion Week, and I flew in my producer in New York City in 2012, and boom, I was in the studio, and in the studio next to me, this artist collective, they were working out of that studio for a few months, and I went for a break to the bathroom, and Nicky Scorpio had his door cracked open, and that's where we met, and we formulated The Sophisticated Psychos, which is streaming everywhere. And it shifted into production. So we have The Sophisticated Psychos on YouTube as well. People can see videos. And he's an amazing singer, songwriter, producer, colorist, editor. He's just so talented. And then he did his solo project, Nicky Scorpio. So Irregulars on streaming everywhere. And then I decided to release my solo project under Saint Kiriaki. And so, we have our collective of our bond and our kinship. And then we went on to do Couples Therapy, which is a web series, which is on the YouTube channel as well. So, he's doing his solo stuff under Nicky Scorpio. I did Saint Kiriaki. And then we'll continue to make music in the near future with one another. And then, do production stuff together and honor each other as artists.
Brilliant. So cool. So cool. And you have a new comedy lockdown comedy series. You won Best Director for the International Film Fest Awards. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Couples Therapy. With the Sophisticated Psychos. I won Best Director for 4, Best Actor for 4 so far. We were over 27 official selections so far. We won 16 or 17 Best web series.
Wow.
And so it was super relatable. I was with Nicky Scorpio, and when everything in March happened, I just literally put my head down, and I'm just like, okay. And I called my producing partner Coast to Coast, and we've all collaborated on multiple projects over the last 5 years. So we did it right on Zoom, and it was real raw and authentic. And we just took spirituality and things that we were literally growing through at the time, and just thought everyone would be able to relate and identify. And so, yeah, that's kind of Couples Therapy and what we created together seamlessly.
Fantastic. Yeah. That's one thing I definitely get the impression from you that you're all about is regardless of what happens, whatever parameters are put upon you, you're going to find a way to make it work. So, got a lot of respect for you for that. So, last question for you here, Katie, before we wrap things up. Thanks again for your time today. It was an excellent interview. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're so sweet. I appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's really natural.
Awesome. I'm glad. Yeah, we were kind of riffing there, which I definitely appreciate. So, what can you say to anybody that is in the creative space or in the artistic space and is looking to pursue something? What is one main piece of advice, aside from we'll have the state, keep it messy or start messy. Aside from that, what can you say? Because there's a lot of people that they just can't get out of the garage, right? They're in there and there's just that fear of their skill level or lack of skill, perceived lack of. What can you say to those folks that, because I think now more than ever, people need artists 1,000. To come forward. Yeah.
1,000. So basically everything is mind, body, spirit. And as an athlete, short-term, medium-term, long-term goals, we need to be coachable and we need to have coaches. So chinagas.com, set up an appointment, you can coach with me. And the thing is, you make short-term, medium-term, long-term goals, and, you know, have someone that can find and be accountable. Because the thing is, J-Lo and Will Smith, they're coached by Aaron Spizer. So Aaron Spizer Studios, when, you know, they're on a movie, like Aaron Spizer's on the movie with them for 3 months. Susan Batson, my acting coach. She's Nicole Kidman's acting coach for, you know, over 19 years. Julia Binoche, now she coaches Madonna, Oprah, Zac Efron, Usher, Liv Tyler. Wow. When I do my voiceovers, I have a club, a voiceover club, and I get on with them on the Skype, and they put it on mute, and they listen to my actor choices, my character choices, my craft, and I do the psychological work, and I do the research, and I do the craft, and I show up, and then they direct me, right? And I make sure I'm my tech, so everything's like tech, the craft, and then psychological. So I show up to the mic, and so I have a team. When I have an on-screen audition for TV and film, I have coaches. Mm. When I'm going through stuff, I have a coach I can call. I have a friend I can call. I have, if I need divine feminine energy, I reach out to those people in my circles and I reach out to them. Instead of saying, because I've been stuck and isolated by myself so many times, that I found to shape shift past the emotion, the energy emotion from being stuck, I need to call and dissipate. Because once I call and dissipate, it just, boom, it's a clearing and you get past it. We have to get past our emotions. So everyone, even if you're Nicole Kidman, even if you're the best of the best on a personal or professional like landslide, like no matter who you are, we all need coaches. Even if I'm a coach or if you're a coach, the coaches need to be coached. The coaches need to be coached, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's my number one thought. It's mind, body, spirit. Be relatable. Or be coachable. And then definitely She's All Over the Place has 68 episodes of valuable, amazing information like I hope you received here today. And then moving forward, it will continue to be that. So definitely tune in there. And then I invite you to, contact me. And then also, you know, for my website, chinakas.com. And 1,000% just do it. Nike to win. Victorious people, start messy, show up for yourself every day, multiple times a day. And when you fall, you just get back up. And when you fall, make it an interpersonal challenge in a game instead of being mad at myself. Oh my God, I fell. No, you're going to fall. You're like, oh my God, I fell. That hurt. Ow. But I'm going to get back up and do it again. And you're just going to keep falling. You're going to have a victory. And then you're like, I got the victory. And then you're like, I was doing so good. And then I fell. Oh, I was talking to my mom. It was going so well. And then I went off on her. Go away, take a break, have some water, leave some space, come back and be responsible. Yo, mom, I love you. Sorry I did that. You know what I mean? Like, truly, I'm sorry. You didn't deserve that. I didn't deserve to speak to you that way. Like, I apologize. And then just move on. So the quicker you can nip it in the butt and own up to it, the better and more, the more we're going to build the momentum for the direction we want to go in.
Oh, man. So good. Excellent. Let's leave it at that. That's some great stuff. I have all your different websites and links that I'm going to put in the show notes. There's just tons of great stuff here. Awesome interview today. Thank you so very much. I'd love to have you back on at some point, but I don't want to take too much more of your time. I apologize for running a little bit over, but there was a lot of great stuff here. So Katie, thank you so much for coming on. It's a pleasure meeting you in this digital realm and hope to meet you someday in person.
I appreciate you, Matt. I'll be back anytime. Thank you so much.